Russell Wilson might need to mind his own business. Russell seems like a pretty good guy. He's going to make the Steelers a much better team than his predecessor, Kenny Pickett, did. And I'm sure he meant well, but he also revealed himself to be one of those people who like to tell companies about which they know nothing how to run their business. Now, you would think he would know a little bit more about how professional sports work, seeing as how, you know, he's made a couple $100 million playing professional football, but the WNBA draft got his attention last night, and Caitlin Clark was the number one overall pick. And she's going to make $338,056, which is pretty good money for a female basketball player. Of course, that's for the first 4 years of her contract. So she's going to start out the season at $76,535 for the year. Now, Russell went to X and posted this. These ladies deserve so much more. Praying for the day. Now, Russell's going to make about 30 times more for one game as the Steelers quarterback this season than Caitlin will make playing her entire rookie year. Doesn't seem fair, does it? But the team that Russell plays for, that would be the Steelers. They get about 350. That's the last I checked. Might be up over that now, but last I checked, it was $350 million a year per team from TV. And, of course, they sell out every game, and they make all kinds of money from all kinds of other things. The entire WNBA, the league, gets $60 million for the season from television. Now, sometimes players in sports think that they're paid a lot of money or should be paid more because people love them. And it's true, people do love them. But people loving them has to translate into people spending lots of money to see them. That's not happening in the WNBA yet. It's kind of a marketing thing that liberals seem to have a problem with. Anyway, $76,000 is a pretty good salary for a kid coming out of college to make. And nobody should be feeling sorry for Caitlin. She's already made a few million dollars on endorsement deals. And you can be sure there'll be lots of people in the media who'll be singing the same tune as Russell Wilson and talking about how the ladies are being discriminated against because they play the same game as the NBA players. And you'll talk about the wage gap and blah, blah, blah. And they're only making one-tenth the money that the NBA makes. Happens every time. This is just the latest episode. Anyway, when we come back, Donald Trump's senior economic advisor, Stephen Moore, will be here to talk about Joe Biden's plan to raise your taxes and what a dumb idea that is. And in our second half hour, we're going to talk to Daniel Turner of Power of the Future about Joe Biden's latest move that will mean you'll be paying more for gas. Stick around. Well, Joe Biden showed up in Scranton today. His speech was about taxes, among other things. I think I can sum up the speech, at least the part about taxes. It went something like this. Tax the rich. That's what the Democrats are running on again this time. Stephen Moore is an economist. He's the founder of Club for Growth. He's a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He knows taxes. He joins us now. Stephen, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And I know too much about taxes, but the one thing I know is that I hate April 15th and I hate this tax system. I think it's the most corrupt, incomprehensible and economically dastardly tax system you could come up with. So we got to burn up the tax code and start over.
Oh, I'm with you on that. I'm a sales tax guy. I think you're a flat tax guy, aren't you?
I like both of them. You know, yeah. I mean, it's a good argument to have, right? Sales tax or flat tax, but you know, I was involved with the, you know, Steve Forbes when he put the flat tax together, and I helped with the, have you heard of the fair tax?
Yeah, I found them on here.
Was involved in that, and in both of those. Can you imagine if we could do either one? It would be like rocket fuel for the economy.
Oh, here's the thing. What I find about the fair tax is when somebody talks to you about taxing the rich, you say, yeah, let's tax the rich on what they spend. And yes. Instead of what they make, it's so easy. I don't know. Maybe that's the problem.
If you buy the Maserati, you're going to have to pay a big tax on that, right? And they spend more because they have more. Yeah. And incidentally, then if you save the money, you don't get taxed, and we get more saving, more investment, more businesses, more entrepreneurs, and higher wages. It's so obvious.
And less power for the government.
Of course, that's why it's an uphill climb.
Yeah,
because. You know, I've always said if you want to drain the swamp, one of the first ways of doing it is to have a fair tax or a flat tax because it takes so much power away from the politicians. Because, you know, even the Republicans and the Democrats do it, obviously, too. They've turned it into another form. They buy and sell tax papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here's
what currency.
Yeah. Here's what I think this is from CNN, but it's this is a quote I think from the Biden campaign. It says, "Trump's tax plan is a handout to the rich and leaves the middle class holding the bag." That's kind of a tax the rich, different way of saying tax the rich, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. That's a really sad declaration. That's what the Democrats keep saying. Oh, it's to soak the rich. And by the way, you know, you talk about the top, you know, 1 or 2% of income. You know what they do, most of those people? 2/3 of them are owners and operators and investors in small businesses. They're the ones who create the jobs. So if you're going to, you know, as my old buddy Dick Armey used to say, you know, the liberals love jobs, but they hate employers. You can't have a job without an employer. If you tax away all the money that you know, the business is making, they're not going to be able to hire more workers. How complicated is that?
Yeah. And then there's this, a 25% minimum tax on all the income of the wealthiest 0.01% of Americans, including their appreciated assets, which are not currently taxed. It would hit those with a net worth of more than $100 million. Who cares about those people, Stephen?
Well, for one thing, you know, you're not going to have, you know, there's a reason why everybody's moving to Texas and Tennessee and Florida and states like that, because they have no income tax. And so, you know, if you do anything near what Joe Biden is trying to do, guess what? Those rich people won't be here. They'll go to Switzerland. They'll go to Bermuda. They'll go anywhere they can to get out of the United States to avoid the tax man. So we want to bring capital into the United States, not force it to leave.
Yeah, and they want to increase the corporate tax rate to 28% from 21%.
21.
What's
yep.
the effect yep. of that when that happens?
Well, remember, the corporate tax, for anybody who's an investor, and I bet a lot of your listeners are, you know, before you can get a return on your stock ownership, on the profits, but guess what? The government takes 21% right off the top. And then you pay tax on top of that if you get money in a capital gain or in a dividend. So it's, you see what I'm saying? It's double tax.
Yeah.
And so if you raise corporate tax to 28%, the tax on your investment is going to go up as high as 50%. So who's going to invest in that kind of thing? Might as well just take your money and blow it and go on a vacation and spend it instead of investing it in new businesses. So I find that to be really economically damaging. And, you know, the other thing about this is, you know, if you have the consumption tax, you know, people earn money so they can spend it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So eventually the money is going to get spent and you're going to tax it. And think about, would you need 80,000 IRS agents if we had a sales tax?
No.
We wouldn't even need half the IRS. Now, we need some IRS agents, but very few. And, you know, we have so many. We have over 100,000 people working in the IRS now. What a waste of money.
Yeah, and the thing that really bothers me about it is that there was no federal income tax, and they had to come up with a constitutional amendment to come up with it. There's some question even about whether that was done legitimately, but it required a constitutional amendment because the people who founded the country, they didn't want the government. The way I look at it, Stephen, is it's none of the government's business how much money I have. None.
That's right.
It should
That's
never.
Exactly
and I don't care
right.
which government, federal, state, or local. How much money do you have? It's none of your business.
It's a privacy issue. And by the way, the New York Times, which is, you'd have to admit, the New York Times is hardly a conservative newspaper. Back when the income tax was ratified and passed and put into place by Congress at a rate of, I think the original rate of the, you know what the highest rate was back in, I think, 1916?
I think it was 3%, wasn't it?
Six. Okay, six or
I'll
seven.
Take that.
So way below 10%.
Yeah.
And the New York Times very prophetically said, you know, once the government gets in the business of feeling like they can take a share of people's money, they're not going to stop. And then it's amazing. 30 years later, the top rate wasn't 6%. It was 90%.
Yep. And the thing about it is that the people who end up in Washington, D.C. with all the power, for all of my life, that as well, especially the Democrats, but all of them do it. They try to control the way you live by using the income tax. We'll allow you to pay less tax if you do this. You know, if you have a kid, we'll give you a deduction for that. If you have interest on a house, we'll give you, and then they use that to create incentives. It stinks.
Right. you know, so they're giving people $7,500 to buy an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And by the way, people still aren't buying them.
Right.
They were bribing people to buy them.
Yeah. And this is the kind of stuff that drives, this guy should be living in Cuba. Bernie Sanders, he says, this is a tweet from him. Here's a radical idea. Billionaires should not have an effective tax rate lower than teachers and nurses. The wealthiest people in the country must start paying their fair share. That's from Bernie Sanders. He's been singing that song now for, what, about 60 years?
And by the way, the top 1% pay 46% of the income tax. So what the hell is he talking about? I mean, and you know, if you raise the taxes up to 60, 70, 80% like he wants to, you're going to collapse the economy. We grew the economy under Reagan. And by the way, I'm very lucky. I'm not saying this to brag. I feel very blessed that I was able to work for the two best presidents in the last 50 years, Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them cut tax rates and the economy boomed. So don't you think they would learn the lesson?
Well, what do you say, Stephen, when somebody makes fun of the trickle-down theory and says it didn't work? Did it work or does it work? Or is it just a poor description of it?
The two big tax cuts we've had in the last, 40 years, Reagan came in 81, and I don't know if you're old enough to remember what the economy was like before Reagan came in.
Oh, I do. I was around.
Remember that? We had 18% interest rates and 11% inflation, and the economy was in collapse. And Reagan, in 18 months, turned the economy around. We had the biggest boom ever. Then Trump came in and do better trade deals, drill, baby, drill, cut tax rates. We had another boom, and people forget, if it had not been for COVID, Trump would have won a 40-state reelection landslide. So these policies work. And, you know, we want to buy, it's John F. Kennedy. It was a Democrat who basically said, if you tax people too much, you're not going to get the revenues. And he was right.
Yep. And here's what Elizabeth Warren tweeted yesterday. This tax day, the wealthy and giant corporations are paying more thanks to POTUS, Joe Biden, Democrats, and the Inflation Reduction Act, which included a 15% tax on billionaire corporations. I love that, billionaire corporations. And 2% tax on stock buybacks, padding CEO pay, and IRS funding to crack down on. So she just loves all this. And she's.
Now, the next time you have Elizabeth Warren on your show, will you ask her a question for me?
I'll never have her on, but go ahead.
Ask her, if we're doing such a great job of soaking the rich, why are we running a $2 trillion deficit?
Yeah, yeah. And she,
whatever they're doing, it isn't working, because we're running the largest deficits in American history. It is just so evil what these people are doing to our country. I mean, we're going to bankrupt America. And I never thought I'd say this about our great country, but can you imagine 4 more years of this?
No, I can't actually. How's that Inflation Reduction Act doing though, Stephen?
Well, how do you feel? Like, you feel like inflation has been reduced? I mean, look at the latest report.
No.
We're back to 5% inflation. You know, now, I love Biden. This is typical of Biden. So do you know what the inflation rate was when Trump left office?
It was very low. 2%?
Yeah, 1.6%.
Yeah.
Okay, so keep that data point in your mind. We're 1.6% in January 2021. Mm-hmm. 18 months later, you know what it was? 9.1%. Thank you, Joe Biden. And so now he's saying, hey, look at me. I brought the inflation rate down to 5%, from 9%. So, I mean, what kind of a bizarre thing is that? Look, it's very simple. Everything you're buying today is, food is 22% more expensive. Gas is 35% more expensive. Rent is 38% more expensive. If you buy a house, your mortgage payment is 42% more expensive. How is that economic progress? How is that helping the little guy?
Well, it's not, but this doesn't happen if not for the media cheerleading this thing.
Does anybody really believe the mainstream media anymore?
No.
I think Americans are onto it. They understand these people lie through their teeth. These are the same people who say that the 2020 election was the cleanest election in history. Remember that?
Right?
these are the people who said the Affordable Care Act was made healthcare more affordable. These are the key people who said that the Black Lives Matter riots were, quote, mostly peaceful. I mean, nobody believes what these people say anymore.
Yeah, but they're out there. I mean,
remember the mostly peaceful argument?
Well, here's you know what, though? Yeah, I do. But, here's what the problem is. They have a major credibility problem, but people still watch CNN and MSNBC. And for
I
that
know,
matter,
not many.
No, not as many as they used to, but it's what they don't report on and as much, if not more, than how they report on whatever it is they do report on. It's what the things they ignore.
Yeah, of course. And they never covered the story about the Trump economic boom, which we had. Did you know we had the low? There's something never reported on. Under Trump, we had the lowest black and the unemployment rate and poverty rate in American history. And the media was too busy calling him a racist to report that.
Right. Well, Joe was in Scranton today. I didn't hear his speech. I haven't got a chance to look at it. But what about the job numbers that he likes to brag about? The unemployment is down, and what are the number? What are the real numbers on that?
Well, look, the jobs market is still strong. We still have more job openings than people looking for work, so that's a good thing. The problem is, if you look at the last jobs report, two things that they didn't really report. number one, did you know that the vast majority of the jobs that were created were part-time jobs?
I'm guessing. I have heard that, and they have numbers on that?
Yeah. We actually lost full-time jobs and gained part-time jobs, so I don't know how that's progress. And the other thing, I don't know if you heard, but you know what the single biggest, fastest-growing sector of the economy is today?
Government. Right. Yeah.
Government. So, you know, these jobs, people are going into the government jobs. They're not going to real jobs.
No. And I see the numbers that I just saw the numbers here. The part-time jobs are up 7.5%. Full-time are down 1.35%.
How is that progress? How are you going to raise your family on a part-time job?
Well, what does that mean, though? What's happening to create that situation where
Well, what's happening is the government's paying people so much money to not work that we're basically have a lot of Americans on the sideline. You know, one of the reasons the unemployment rate is so low is people aren't even looking for jobs. They're sitting on the dole.
Yeah. So, you know, we can talk about the numbers, and this is what you do every day. You deal with looking at these numbers and trying to get the word out. But have conditions actually reached the point that the average person just knows the economy's not right just by waking up every day?
Yes. You know, if you look at every poll that's been done for the last 2 years, almost without any variation, you know, two out of three Americans say they're worse off today than they were when Trump was president. And because they feel it every time they go to the store. I mean, sometimes when I'm at the gas station or at the grocery store, people come up to me, they, you know, they'll see me on Fox or one of these shows, and they'll get mad at me. They'll say, why do you keep saying inflation's only like 4 or 5%? I said, well, that's the official number. But they get it. But the official number's BS. It doesn't reflect the cost of what people are really having to pay. I mean, how many people out there do you think believe that the inflation's only 4 to 5%? And Biden says it's 3.5%. No, it's not.
Well, if everybody knows things are bad, does the election just become it's about who's going to be the best at convincing the voters which one of them to blame for how bad things are?
Well, here's my opinion. If it's an election about policy, then Trump wins, right? Mm-hmm. He wins run away. Because, I mean, even if you're a liberal, you got to agree his policies are a lot better than Biden's on everything from energy to the border to, you know, cutting taxes and regulation. But if it comes down to like abortion or, you know, some of Trump's antics, and I love Trump, I'm working as one of the senior economic advisors, but sometimes he can be his own worst enemy. So I want this to be about the policy. Folks, you know, when you go vote, think about who's better for our country.
Yeah. Well, I got less than a minute left with Stephen Moore. As you heard, he's a senior economic advisor for Donald Trump. What's the first thing that Donald Trump would or could do upon being elected that would allow people to see a quick turnaround?
I think it'll take 6 months for us to get back on track. And I asked Trump that very question a few weeks ago when I had dinner with him. He said, you know, the first thing we're going to do is reverse almost every Biden policy on the economy. We're going to drill. We're going to cut taxes, not raise them. We're going to, you know, look, if you believe in this soak the rich stuff, somebody show me any country in the history of the world that got rich by soaking the people who get rich. Mm-hmm. In other words, is it now a crime to be successful?
Well, it is. It is for Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
Why do we want to punish people who are successful?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling, but it terrifies me that they could get 4 more years of this. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how much money do they want Taylor Swift to pay?
Hey, Stephen, I appreciate you coming on, and I hope to talk again before the election. Thank you.
Me too. Take care.
All right, thanks. That's Stephen Moore. He's a senior economic advisor for Donald Trump. I'll be right back. Joe Biden came to Pennsylvania today. He gave a speech in Scranton after getting heckled, by the way, on the way in. I didn't hear the whole speech, but I'm going to guess that he probably didn't reiterate his promise to get rid of fossil fuels and end fracking, but we'll see. I don't know how much gas is going for down in Scranton where he is, but it's up to $3.90 a gallon here and probably going up. Daniel Turner is founder and executive director of Power of the Future. He joins us now. Always good to have you on, Daniel. Thank you.
John, always a pleasure to be on your program. Thank you for having me back.
So, Joe Biden, he got heckled on the way in. I don't think it was about gas prices. I think it was something to do with his brilliant handling of the of foreign affairs. But you had a release today at Power of the Future about how Joe has decided that apparently increasing the cost of getting oil out of the ground is a good way to lower those gas prices.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable to watch what's happening. There is a huge disconnect between the White House and the Biden campaign. And legally, there should be, right? You can't use the White House to run for office. That's not ethical. It's not legal. But everybody who works for the president knows that every decision you make has political consequences and polling consequences. And in an election year, even more so. It's kind of why the Biden administration now seems to have found billions of dollars for student loans. Right? They have found it now because it's an election year.
Right.
I'm sure they could have found it last year, but it wasn't an election year. So there's this incredible disconnect between the Biden energy team in the White House and then eventually voters in places like Pennsylvania. They've increased royalties. They've increased bonding fees, and not small increases, enormous increases. And all of those cost increases are going to be passed on to consumers. They're going to make it harder to bring oil and gas to production. They're going to make it more expensive. And that's all going to lead to continually high prices, high gas prices, high heating bill, high prices. So I don't understand what the hell's happening. I don't understand who's running this show. Have they just given up the fact that they're going to lose in November and say, "Yeah, we might as well push as much crazy green stuff as we can"?
Yeah, you mentioned that he came up with a new rule that's going to increase the cost. It was last Friday, just late in the week. What was exactly that they came up with that's going to cause the costs to go up?
Yeah, well, one of the numbers, for example, is when you get a lease on federal land, you have to put down money for a bond, and you have to put down $10,000, which makes sense, right? This is federal land,
yeah.
So it's your bond for any potential wrongdoings. Well, that went from $10,000 to $150,000.
Whoa.
That's a 1,400% increase.
Wait a minute, but what are they using as justification for that?
They hate the fossil fuel industry.
Okay.
Pay their fair share.
Yeah.
Greed, exactly. Record profits. All the same boring lines that they roll out all the time. What this is meant to do, it is meant to stop people from wanting to produce oil and gas. It's meant to scare off people who don't want to have to find another $150,000 on top of the millions they have to find to produce oil and gas. And, you know, an interesting little fact that maybe your audience is unaware, although a lot of people and your listeners are in this industry, 80% of our oil and gas, 80% comes from small independent producers.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and pop shops, family run businesses. You know, everyone knows the name Exxon and Conoco and Chevron, but the vast majority of our oil and gas comes from small, independent, family run producers. They can't find $150,000. And so if the majority of the people are going to struggle with this new pricing, that means the industry as a whole is going to suffer, and that's bad for America.
Well, that's interesting. Could you explain that about how the small producers? Because what would a small business oil producer look like?
Yeah, and small is granted a relative term.
Yeah.
Right. There are some independent producers that are larger than some corporations, no doubt, but they're not publicly traded companies. They don't have shareholders. It's, you know, the John Steigerwald family oil business that has done well over generations and now employs dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, but they're still privately run independent family businesses, and they produce overwhelming the majority of our oil and gas.
And who am I selling my oil to if I have my own smaller business?
Just like the big dogs, you're selling it normally to the refiners, right? You're bringing your crude to surface and you're selling it to the refiner. And these are the parts of the process that Biden doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. So he says, we're going to punish oil and gas and because they won't lower the price of gas at the pump. Well, by the time it gets to the pump, it's been bought and sold multiple times. The people who bring it to the surface usually sometimes sell it to transporters. If it's not connected to a pipeline, they sell it to the refiner. The refiner sells it to a distributor. The distributor sells it to the gas station. And all of those things are additional costs, additional time. Biden doesn't understand this industry. He doesn't understand the multiple steps involved. So he comes up with these big, grandiose policies that punish the industry writ large. And boy, we're all feeling it. We're all seeing prices of gas go up. We see the price of food. We see the price of heating and utilities. It's just been 3 years of expensive life under Biden.
So if I if I go into an Exxon station and I buy and I fill my tank up, how much did Exxon have to do with that gas that's going into my car? Besides having a name on it.
Yeah, and they probably refined it, you know, and now granted, they this is where the big companies are involved in all steps, right? A major corporation produces, but it can also refine, and it can also be in charge of downstream multiple functions, whether it's gas, whether it's jet fuel. But those are the big dogs. A lot of companies just focus on one small specific thing. So the gas that you're putting in your car, it could have come from Alaska. It could have come from Western PA. It could have come from New Mexico. But most of it heads to the Gulf, and then that's where it's refined, and that's where it gets turned into multiple different properties at the end.
Well, the gas, the average cost for a gallon has gone up 20 cents in the last, a month, I guess? As I said, it's $3.90 a gallon here. I know it was... it was like $3.69 a couple of weeks ago, and now it's $3.89.9, which is $3.90. What is the immediate cause of that 20-cent jump? What was the immediate cause, I guess?
Well, there's a few things at play. One, our oil production numbers are down considerably. There was a lot of hoopla back in January of how we have record production, 3.5 million barrels. Biden is the best. Well, we're down about 800,000 from there. And that's a huge drop in production numbers. And also we're heading into the busiest time of the year, for gas because people are driving. How many people are on spring break right now? They're taking their kids to go see colleges. They are just traveling. We're heading into the summer months where you do your family road trips. So gas is normally high this time of year because it's when we use the most of it. But you try to offset that by producing more. However, given the difficulty of producing oil and under the Biden administration, those production numbers are not going to increase anytime soon.
And so I thought we might see $4 a gallon again last summer, and we didn't. Why didn't we, and why might we see it this summer?
Last summer, the main reason why is because of the collapse of the Chinese economy. China consumes a tremendous amount of world supply of oil, and China has been really under lockdown since COVID, and the Chinese economy is just starting to wake up again. And so if they wake up to their full potential as they were in 2019, pre-COVID, yeah, you'll see those numbers continue to increase. So a lot of the benefit of last year was, yes, our production numbers were higher, but also China was still in a bit of a depression. Those factors look like they are going to reverse, and that's bad news for the American consumer.
So if we are at 390 now and it isn't a Memorial Day yet, how do you like the chances of $4 a gallon here in Western PA?
Oh, I think it's almost inevitable, because we also haven't talked about what's happening in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's pressure on Israel to not retaliate. I think that's insanity. You know, people say, well, they didn't do as much damage as they had intended. Well, you know what? If someone took 300 punches at me and missed them all, and I could laugh and say, hey, you missed me 300 times, but that doesn't mean I'm going to let you do it again.
No, you punch him in the face.
Exactly. And Israel knows that the best way to punch Iran in the face is to remove their source of revenue. And their revenue is oil. They are producing now over 3 million barrels of oil a day. For perspective, when Trump was president, because of his sanctions and because of his strict Iran policies, they were producing around 700,000 barrels a day. So do the math, 700,000 barrels at around $55 a barrel versus 3.1 million barrels at $85 a barrel.
It's a lot of money for missiles.
That's a lot of money for that. Bingo. There's a lot of money Iran has right now, and the best way to stop them from going to war is to take away their money and their cash flow. And that means targeting their oil. I don't want to see oil go through the roof. I don't want to see oil at $100 a barrel. But I feel like it's almost inevitable because of geopolitics.
Well, what happens, and we're talking to Daniel Turner. He's the executive director of Power of the Future. So what happens if all of a sudden Iran's oil production is just obliterated, not obliterated, but just drastically reduced? How long does it take for that to be felt back here, based on the way things are going with what's happening with energy production back here?
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, oil markets, like a lot of markets, they get spooked pretty easily. And so what you could see is this an initial crazy response. If there is some attack or something happen, you could see prices go through the roof one day, but then the next day all the speculators calm down and they're like, all right, it's actually not so bad, and the prices will adjust. But if it's permanent damage, it could be immediate and long term. So I guess it depends upon what happens now. But again, that shouldn't be the case. If America were producing and we were allowing the producers to drill, if we were giving them access to Alaska, to the Gulf, the way we have in the previous administration, it doesn't matter what the world is doing. It doesn't matter what China's doing. It doesn't matter. So we've allowed ourselves under Biden to once again be subjected to the whims of lunatics, bad actors, Islamic radicals, Chairman Xi in China. Imagine if Pennsylvania could just say, it doesn't matter what the rest of the world does, we're good. And that's a level of stability we could have that we once had, but we've lost under Joe Biden. And that's tragic.
And what about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? What's happening with that?
Well, he's not replenishing it. They made that announcement last week.
But he promised to do that, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yeah. he gave us his word as a Biden, as yeah. He would often say. Yeah. So again, that's just another variable in this awful scenario. The variable being, what happens if? When Hurricane Katrina hit, we used 3 weeks' worth of reserves because the Gulf Coast was in bad shape. Well, we don't have 3 weeks of reserves anymore. You know, Biden depleted them, and he didn't refill them as he promised he would. So this is our rainy day fund, right? But you know what? Who does this surprise, right? I mean, remember back in the day, Al Gore would talk about the lockbox with Social Security?
Yeah.
They depleted that. They deplete everything. You can't give government money. You can't give government goods and say, hold on to it, guys. Hold on to it in case something bad happens. If you give, especially Democrats, if you give them anything, they're going to spend it. They're going to spend it on what helps them politically, what's expedient, and, you know, we'll worry about the future tomorrow.
Well, we hear a lot about World War III, which is kind of unfortunate. It's not something that you really want to hear about, but, you know, that's being thrown around a little bit now, more than it was in the past. And I don't know what that would look like, but isn't the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, isn't that kind of what you have around in case there is a World War III and you can't get any oil at all out of the Middle East?
Exactly, and that's why it was created back in 75. And you know who was a new senator in Washington, D.C. in 1975? Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been there since the very beginning. He saw the Arab oil embargoes. He saw what was happening with America's economy because we were dependent upon this foreign entity for our oil. But then something amazing happened in America. The shale revolution happened. The fracking revolution happened. And we were able to produce more oil and gas than anyone else could possibly imagine. We have so many oil and gas reserves in this country, we should be able to have the luxury of saying, doesn't matter what OPEC does, doesn't matter what Russia does, doesn't matter what the Middle East does, we're fine. But we're not in that scenario anymore. Now we're back to being just in the mix of all these other annoying little countries that are dictators and hellscapes. Now we're caught up in their nonsense. It's tragic.
Yeah, let's do business with them. So I'm out of time, Daniel. It's always good to have you on. I have you on pretty often. So how do you like the it's $3.90 a gallon here. Do you think the next time we talk it'll be $4? Or how soon would I have to get you on to maybe get us up to $4?
To get us up to $4, today's April 16th.
Yeah.
By May 5th, I'm going to give you May 5th.
All right, maybe we'll have you on May 5th and see if we're at $4. But I always like having you on because you explain why all this insanity is happening, and you do great work. Thanks for coming on, as usual.
Always a good time. Thank you.
Okay, that's Daniel Turner of Power of the Future. I'll be right back. Well, I used to like John Mellencamp. I still like his music, kind of. But I don't like him anymore. I mean, I didn't have really any strong opinion about him as a person, but there's a video that's gone viral of him at a concert in Toledo a few weeks ago. Apparently, he absolutely, definitely walked off in the middle of his concert after starting a song, Jack and Diane. He sang about first two lines of it, and then he just left because he had been heckled by some of the crowd. Apparently because he was telling them about how much he loved Joe Biden. These people are, I don't know anything about John Mellencamp, although I do think, I did have an engagement with him in the press lounge at Three River Stadium for a Steelers game when he came up to the table where I was sitting and asked to bum a cigarette from somebody back in the days when you were allowed to smoke in there. Anyway, and he seemed like a nice guy, but what's wrong with these people? They just don't get it. If you're going to go to the people come to your concert, they want to hear your music. And if you shouldn't talk about how much you love Donald Trump unless you're Kid Rock or somebody like that. Everybody knows when they come there that you're a political guy and you've been out there. But just shut up and sing. You're just driving half of the people away. Why would you do that? I have no sympathy for him. No, well, he doesn't need, and he probably has plenty of money, doesn't need to do another concert. But I thought about the song Cherry Bomb, which I always liked. And he says, that's when a sport was a sport, and grooving was grooving. And dancing meant everything. We were young, and we were improving. I loved that song. I still do. I'm still going to listen to it. But I don't care if I ever see John Mellencamp again. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.